Two men from different walks of life, both so curious, it drives them crazy. This is the Jack and Max Show.
Friends, we are here with our friend Stuart Hetherington. Stuart is the founder and CEO and commander-in-chief at Bleep Sleep Solutions. I think it's still your motto, Stuart. I love it, is we give a bleep about sleep. I find anybody that can have humor in the CPAP space is winning already.
Yes.
Stuart is a 30-year pioneer in the sleep industry. I think it's probably more now, but from what I read was approximately 15 sleep apnea product patents. Is that right, or is it more now?
It's probably closer to 30 total patents that are filed or underway.
So double than what I had read. Perfect. And correct me if I'm wrong, he's a certified sleep technician, researcher, and apnea patient.
I used to be. I let it lap. So there's 0% chance that I'm going to go back in the diagnostic side of things. So I was just like, I'm done on that front.
So it's not like once a tap dancer, always a tap dancer.
That's correct. I tap dance right off the stage. Or maybe you could say I got yanked off the stage because my tap dancing is not very good. But I gave that.
But you did do it. You were it.
Yeah,
you did do it.
That was it for 25 years, basically. And there's really not. Yeah, not a reason to have the initials behind my name for it.
Can we do this?
I've got enough going on.
Stuart, you have so much going on. And I know what sleep apnea is. You do. Jack does. For some people that don't. And I always like to start with this. Can you explain to me, like I'm a six-year-old.
So if you were a six-year-old, imagine your older brother sitting on your throat.
That sounds terrible.
And you just not being able to breathe. Like, and he just is like, you know what? I'm going to sit on your throat like 100 times an hour and let's just see how you do and how good you feel when I get done with that. So it's a little more nuanced than that. Back in the 80s, it used to be that everybody thought that sleep apnea, you just had to be obese. Like, okay, if you're fat, a high probability that you have sleep apnea. And then we kind of got into the 90s and just like, it could be. Your tonsils and your adenoids and then get to the 2000s. And it's more like as I was going through the field, some of the worst patients I ever laid eyes on were thin. So weight really is an exacerbator to sleep apnea. In a lot of cases, it starts off with a physiological issue. So it's tonsils, it's adenoids. You're just born with a narrow airway. You've got, polyps in your nose, like you just can't breathe through your nose. You compound all of these kind of milder symptoms that you were kind of maybe going through as a teenager and kind of in your college years where you're like, hey, let's pound the caffeine. And as you get into your 30s, the weight just doesn't shed off. And so now you're packing the weight, around this area, you're putting it on your jaws. And, or if you're a female, you've had, a couple of kids, haven't quite lost the baby weight. So it's just those things are like putting gas on a fire and it's just much harder to put out. So more and more people are getting diagnosed. A lot of that is because home sleep testing has really become the more prevalent opportunity to create a diagnosis or confirm a diagnosis.
Is that instead of having to go to a sleep lab?
Instead of going to the sleep lab, yes. That is still the main way people get diagnosed, but since COVID, home sleep testing has, gone bonkers because sleep labs were just basically closed down for 6 months. You couldn't get into a hospital, you couldn't get into a lab. So everybody was home sleep testing. And then Medicare changed, kind of its restrictions on how it was going to let Medicare patients, get diagnosed. And so home sleep testing just, kind of broke through. It was kind of on the cusp, but it was like a fire across a plane and it just burned up the industry. And so more and more people are getting diagnosed. You're seeing more and more dentists because who looks down more throats more frequently than dentists? And they're looking at them, more throats at a younger age. So they're seeing that, palates and jaws aren't right. So they're fixing those, pre-braces. They're, they're pulling your jaws forward. They're restructuring palates. doing with palate expansion, just trying to open the airways up. You're seeing less and less tonsillectomies, but I mean, it's one of those things where just more and more people are getting diagnosed, treated. Dentists are trying to treat, you know, your milder and moderate patients with mandibular advancement splints by putting a mouth guard in your mouth, but still the gold standard is CPAP. The issue is all of the modalities for treating sleep apnea, you know, can be challenging for people.
Stuart, if I may.
Yep.
You know, they say that necessity is the mother of invention. And in your case, you had sleep apnea yourself, and you probably still have it. Is that correct?
That's an interesting story. I do have sleep apnea now. Definitive. I'm probably in the upper moderate, low severe range now. That's it. I have never been tested. I know I've got it because wake my sleep, myself up in my sleep if I crash in a chair or something. But the underlying reason as to why I got on CPAP was essentially I got the shit scared out of me by an older guy in his 70s. This guy came in at that time, my dad had already been diagnosed with sleep apnea. I knew my grandfather had it. I thought my uncle had it. Well, it turns out my uncle does have it, is on CPAP now. My grandfather was a terrible snorer, but my dad was already on CPAP. You've been seeing it. And this guy comes in one night, same build as I am. And at that time, I was 175 pounds. I didn't snore. I slept great. And guy comes into the sleep lab. The wife was like, yeah, he snores some. But the main reason he was in was he had idiopathic hypertension. They couldn't get his blood pressure under control. So the only thing that kind of looked unusual about the guy is when he turned sideways, he had a recessed jaw, return atheus, so this little slumped in jaw. Inside what? Of the first 30 minutes. Yes, go ahead.
What is idiopathic hypertension?
It's uncontrolled high blood pressure.
Gotcha. Keep going.
So inside of 30 minutes, this guy's oxygen saturations are in the 50s. Like, he's tanking. So he met emergency split protocol, which is where you're going to put CPAP on somebody because, like, he's just so bad that you can't wait. And put CPAP on him. And he laid there for, like, hours, just couldn't get to sleep. And he finally got up. And it was probably 3 a.m. So, you know, guy slept 40 minutes all told. Gets up, goes to the bathroom, still hasn't slept on CPAP, comes back probably within an hour after having used the bathroom, went back to sleep finally, and he maybe slept another 40 minutes. And I called him REMsipon, which is on your back. REM is when you sleep and you dream. That is the worst stage of sleep you can be in, worst position of sleep you can be in. I think I titrated him on CPAP. It was under 10. He had stable oxygen levels, like above 96%. Sleep was consolidated. He did great. He woke back up. Went back to the bathroom, never slept the rest of the night. He just laid in bed like the last 2 hours. So it was just watching him, watching the camera.
Tossing and turning.
Yeah. And so he gets up and he was like, you know, I didn't sleep at all. I didn't sleep a wink. And I was like, oh, well actually you did. He's like, I don't think so. And I was like, no, you did. You just weren't aware of it. And I know it was a rough night, but look, it's just going to take some time. A lot of people don't, you know, acclimate to CPAP like right away. And he was just adding, I just don't think I can do this. And, you know, he exited stage left. And it's a couple months later, we're in the hospital. I was at a satellite hospital working by myself when this happened. And they were doing peer review. And the medical director pulled up the study. And she was like, hey, Stuart, do you recall the study? And I was like, yeah, you know, I recall. She goes, well, he's had a massive stroke. And we tried to do a titration in the hospital. It didn't go well. So we're going to bring you back in and we're going to do another titration. But this time on bilevel, because the stroke that he had has now, he's got complex sleep apnea. He's got a central component with the obstructive sleep apnea. And
Stuart,
yeah.
You know, it's such a complicated disease, as you well know. And given the fact that you've experienced it, your family's experienced it, and people you know have experienced it. You take us back, if you could remember, what that moment in time was for you that fueled your desire to help others that are facing these challenges and to come up with a solution as you have so well.
I was actually doing a continuing education class at the beach, and my wife actually worked for Philips Respironics at the time. And she was working the booth. I was, you know, sitting in lectures. It was a Saturday, like there was a Friday, Saturday, Sunday kind of event. And I woke up about 3:30 in the morning, Saturday morning. And I literally just kind of had an epiphany dream. and woke my wife up. I had gotten a hotel napkin and had drawn a sketch of this, what was going to eventually be Dreamport, our Gen 1 mask, and woke her up, and we talked about it for probably an hour. And like her first thing was like, hey, look, if that works, it answers a lot of problems. So we wrapped up the show at noon on Sunday. I drove home. I had an old nasal pillow mask, and I cut all the headgear off of it. I went to Lowe's Home Goods and bought these two little tubes that had a flange on them. I bought some corn patches, and I literally did proof of concept a day and a half later.
It's like a serious MacGyver move.
Yeah, it was just, yeah, you could say that. And but there was no release mechanism. So like the little ports that kind of I'd created, which would essentially become Dreamport, we kind of jammed those down to the nasal pillow cushions, and my wife had to hold the mask while I kind of taped it onto my face. And I slept at a pressure of 10 that whole night, and it worked, no leaks. Got up Monday morning, and I was like, hey, I said, it worked. And I went out that morning and hired a patent attorney. And we filed a provisional patent. You get a year. That year went by. We filed final patent. And it was probably about 2.5 years later that I had sold my sleep labs at the time. And our patent attorney called me. And he was like, hey, they're going to grant your patent. And I went out that weekend and raised $150,000. And then the first thing we did was we did an investigation of all the patents across the planet to see if there was anything, you know, that was remotely like it. We didn't think there was, and it turned out there wasn't. So that was somewhere between 2014, 2015. And now it's 29 more patents later. And our Gen 2 product is out, which is called Eclipse. And it's gone from a mechanical clasp, which you had tried, to a magnetic array.
It looks amazing. I was just looking at it all morning. It looks amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's literally, when Dreamport came out, we were the smallest and lightest mask in the industry. Eclipse, while it weighs the same, is actually even smaller. And you just put the tape on, and you lift the mask up, and the mask just magnetizes right on the end of your nose. But if you put it on correctly, it literally answers, you know, more than 20 pain points in the industry. And the issue is most patients, you know, are having problems with you know, multiple pain points. They have leaks, they've got, you know, they struggle with marks on their face that stay there for hours. You know, women,
it pulls your hair out. Some of them, I know people that have, it pulled their hair out a little bit.
Bald spots, tangled hair. A lot of people have flat occipital regions in the back of the head, and the headgear will ride up the back of their head, and the mask will just come off the front of their nose. So the more pain points you have, the more of a solution our masks are. So that's...
So if there was, like, I have to commend you, because it's hard to make things sexy in the world of sleep apnea, but the name Dreamport is as close as I've heard of anything come to me going, ooh, what's a Dreamport, Stuart? Well, yeah, and now you've got the Eclipse. I feel like it's like if I was riding in first class on KLM, they'd go, sir, would you like an Eclipse? And I'd be like, I don't have apnea, but hit me, baby, you know? I hope you get commendations at whatever your conferences are that you go to once a year or whatever, where they go, and again, the award for best name goes to Stuart Hetherington.
I wish that was the thing that they gave awards for names, because I do think the names of our masks are clever.
It's important.
And it's funny that like you bring that up. Like it was like 2 years ago, we were at at MedTrade, and there's actually a center section booth for like new product creations within a year.
Is that in Atlanta? Is that the one in Atlanta?
Yes. It's at that time it was in Atlanta. It was the last one that we did in Atlanta. And so we had like this podium set up, and all the new product pavilion entrance, you know, are behind glass. And it was funny because like we were there, and like some head of marketing for ResMed, it was like the last day of the show. And this head of marketing for ResMed was actually standing in front of our product, just kind of like with his head cocked sideways and just staring at the mask. And my VP of sales, Tom Honeywell, had gone over to him and had like covered up his name and was just standing beside him. And it just like started up this conversation with him. And the ResMed guy was like, yeah, I've never seen anything like this before. And so Tom had just gotten a little bit out of him, but the guy was kind of enamored looking at it through the glass.
I just want to jump in for those people that don't know, and correct me if I'm wrong, ResMed is one of, if not the top CPAP manufacturers in the world, right?
That is correct. They're number one with a bullet. They're the beast in the industry. And they don't have anything like ours.
So Ferrari came over and was standing in your booth at the trade show going like, I've never seen a car like this before.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, if I had ResMed's market cap, like
sure.
We could, you know, have the types of sales reps and awareness that ResMed creates, we would probably be, you know, a much bigger company than we are right now. But yeah, we're a small, you know, couple people company, and we just bootstrapped the heck out of this thing to get
Henry Ford one person company, Stuart.
That's right.
Like we're three people, so it's just one of those things where more and more people are finding out about us, but it's a very organic growth type company. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, that's a great point because, you know, when listeners, they hear somebody's story and the way that you explained it is that you had a pretty smooth sailing. All of us know that it's never a linear line. There's challenges along the way. And so for you as a businessman, share with us a little bit of those challenges. And then also, what about personally? Because this is also very personal when you're building a business from scratch. And so what were those challenges that you experienced both personally and in business?
I can tell you with a company where it's med device, like money is you're finding money, bringing money in. It's med device is very expensive. So you're constantly trying to raise and create interest on that front, as well as, you know, interact with patients. Like as you had said, you and I had talked previously. So I'm the face of the company. I've already had multiple phone calls today from patients. So I'm constantly interacting with patients, but you're also interacting with investors. You're interacting on, you know, every aspect of, you know, trying to build the company. You know, I'm in the warehouse every day. I'm involved in, you know, the shipping side of it. I mean, it's nonstop. You know, if you don't like 65, 70 hour work weeks, you don't want to be in a startup. And it's, you know, the complexities of, you know, starting a company from scratch in just a normal kind of climate is one thing. But when we launched the month before COVID shut everything down, like
congratulations on your great timing.
That is not that is not good timing from a coming out story. Like it's just not. Like we had a distributor set up and, you know, we launched product, and I mean, literally 1 month later, we got an email. Hey, we're quarantining our sales department. We're not going to be out selling your product. We're canceling the rest of the order, the purchase order that we put in for product. So I'm not saying that we're the only company that had it bad. We're not. I mean, I know tons of companies like closed during the, you know, the process of COVID.
You can say it. You can say it.
But it's, you know, it's just you compound like the normal kind of startup problems, and then you throw COVID on it, and it's like apnea when you're younger and you get older, and it's the gas on a fire. So it was a struggle. We made it through. We got an NIH grant from the government that helped us develop Eclipse, that helped us get that, you know, to market. You know, we came out of COVID, and, you know, it was just essentially it's starting all over again from scratch. You're trying to reinvent not just being a company focusing on the insurance DME side of the market, but you're trying to, you know, how can we get more into the direct-to-consumer market? It's pivoting on the fly constantly. I mean, if you aren't functioning day-to-day with your head on a swivel, like, you're going to lose your mind.
Well, that's my next question. Your story is fascinating to me, and I'm sure it is to a lot of people listening, because you're all about grit. You've put the effort in, you've put the time in, the perseverance. And so have you, and I know you did, I know that you've learned some lessons along the way about yourself and who you are and what you're really made of. What would you say that is for you during this journey of perseverance and just never quitting?
It's learning to be patient, probably more so than anything. And most people would tell you, including my wife and my kids, I am not a very patient person.
Me neither. Can you share any tips on that, please?
Like, I'm the type of guy that, like, if something goes wrong, like, I'm busting my phone open and I'm making 20 or 30 phone calls until I absolutely have a solution, like, that day.
Entrepreneur through and through.
Because there's no reason not to do it.
Yeah, it's just not in me to sit there and go, okay, oh, well, I'm going to turn that over to so-and-so. And, you know, let's see, I'm going to circle back around, put that on my calendar. Like, no, I'm not, no, this has got to be answered today. And it gets on a lot of people's nerves, but I've gotten better at it. But it's been a very, very challenging obstacle to overcome.
Well, when you're a two-person, you know, operation, two or three person operation, I mean, there's the old saying, no one's going to do it like you're going to do it, right? Like, it's much easier to just do it than, even when you're delegating, than try to explain it to a bunch of other people, right? I mean, when COVID happened, how did you guys pivot with, because of course you had all of this stuff planned and ready to go. And even then you were still probably, you know, not nervous, but like ready to jump into the market, right? What did you guys do to pivot right when COVID happened? How did you pivot?
It was a little bit slower undertaking because, you know, I think at the time we were probably five people in the company, and most of the people making up the company at the time had a ton of experience in the company. Like there was, you know, our VP of marketing was formerly from Fisher and Paykel in New Zealand. I had two guys that were former Respironics C-suite guys. One had formerly been over like from the middle of the country to the West Coast for ResMed. And then somebody else had also come in that used to work for Philips Respironics and then had helped with Fisher and Paykel. So like all these guys were just, they were old school. Hey, this is how it's got to go. And like, we have to do it this way. And you can't, we can't go direct to consumer. Like, so there was a lot of internal pushback for, all right, well, how are we going to pivot? And I don't think anybody at that time really knew what was going to happen or how we were going to do it. In the end, there were a lot of hard lessons, and you know, a lot of those guys are not still with us. So I think all along, it's been incredibly hard to kind of, like I said, reinvent not only what we are as a company, but how we were going to present ourselves in the industry. And I'm not going to get it. It took 3 years to kind of like figure out like what it was going to be. We just, you know, initially we're like, hey, look, this product works. And, you know, and the people that we put it on initially, you know, they loved it. You know, all we got to do, it was going to be Field of Dreams. Just build it and they'll come. Build it and they'll come. Wrong. It does not work that way. Maybe 20 years ago, like when the internet was new and you could just throw anything up on the internet and like, you know, stuff would explode.
Not even 20 years ago. Right. It takes time. In show business, we have a saying. I'm an actor and a writer and a filmmaker. And there's a saying, it takes 7 years to make a movie. And even when you have the script already, like you think, great, we're going to make this movie. Nope, it takes 7 years. Find out everybody's scheduling. Then people come and leave. You have some employees on. Those employees move on. You know, it always takes longer than we think it does because we're idea people. We have good ideas. You have this brilliant idea. And we're like, why doesn't everybody else see it? Let's do it. It's this easy. Yeah. Tape it onto your nose, people. Let's go. Well, come on.
And the other thing too is that you were a trendsetter with this design. All the commercial masks out there, none of them had this concept. And if you look at if you pair it up against any of the other masks, it's a very, very brand new category in the mask space. So you went through that as well, all the suspicions around that. And
oh, those are still there.
Look at this guy with this idea.
Did you do you face big box pushback of these other people going like,
all from day one?
No, everybody, keep buying masks that go over your entire face. Here's a space helmet.
Oh, I kid you not. Like, there's still so much pushback. I remember our VP of marketing was down in Florida calling on some opportunities and popped into this doctor's office and literally was kind of berated by this sleep physician who was like, he was just adamant, there's no way that'll work. And I mean, wouldn't even let him demo the product. And he left. And when he shared the story with me, it was ridiculous. It's kind of like social media, even like, you know, I told you I let my RPSGT credentials, like I let those go. Well, I really thought that the rest of the tech field would be far more open and accommodating and welcoming. to something that was new that, could solve some issues? The answer to that was a cold-hearted no. It's like people didn't want to hear about it. And there's still a ton of people that, like, if you go, on any kind of social, you get tons of feedback where people are like, there's no way that it's going to work. Like, you can even present them with papers and data. And we've got, like, gobs of video testimonials where people will just film themselves with a phone talking about the product and the answers. Our masks solved. People just, it's like keyboard warriors that they come out of the woodwork and they're just like, that's idiotic. That's stupid. It's not going to work. And that tape's going to eat your skin off. We're 6 years in the market. I still have people, they're like, oh, that tape's going to peel your skin off. I'll have respiratory therapists. I'll have nurses that'll come on Facebook. And, I've seen what, long-term tape applications will do to people's skin. And I'm like, yeah, but you're not looking at the big picture. You're just thinking of a couple of people that have some skin irritation. Yeah, and you're projecting it on the whole industry. And It doesn't Broad work stroke. That way. It's like people that are like huge ResMed fans or, they'll come out of the woodwork as well. And they're like, you should just don't use that. You should just use my ResMed P10. And yeah, it's the world's best selling mask, but I got news for you. There's a ton of people that don't like the ResMed P10. It doesn't solve everybody's problems, but people think because I wear it, you must wear it too. Yeah. I drive a Tesla. You must drive a Tesla.
That's a great analogy.
Yeah. I mean, and it's just like, okay, like, dude, your problems are not my problems.
Right.
Like, to get a grip.
Yeah. Well, for all the naysayers out there, has anybody ever tried to knock you off? And if so,
who are they? Too many patents.
And where are they? And what can we do to help you track them down and find them? Because we got your back, Stuart. If they're there,
put them in some meat locker down in Southern Jersey.
I'm on a plane to North Carolina. You just tell me where.
Get a bag of rocks and a sock. work them over.
Bag of nickels. Yep.
Hey, Joey.
Exactly. But you said no, it hasn't happened.
It certainly not in the U.S. Like, if you try to come into the U.S. market, like, you're with something that even remotely looks like our product, you're going to get sued. There's just too many patents, too many different iterations, too many different ways that, like, we have stuff kind of buttoned up. And there's, like, we did a freedom to operate opinion search, and there was only one company that had anything adhesive related to a CPAP mask, and it wasn't where the adhesive was actually involved with sealing off the nose. So, and that actually ended up being ResMed had one patent. We had to share that with the patent office. So if you are going to make anything where you're connecting onto the outside of adhesive, where the adhesive actually seals off your nostrils, you're opening the door to, getting the mask suit out of you.
Yeah.
And then, we've taken it one step further. This is, this is in full face mask iterations as well. We've got a patent where, we'll end up releasing, the first hybrid mask on the market where the patient literally could be nasal one night and full face mask the next night. And it's never been done before. And it would be the smallest full face mask in the market with no headgear, no straps. So, we're an innovative company, and it's just taken us a little bit longer to kind of get where we want to be. But like, I think we're on the right path now.
Stuart, I just want to lay this out for everybody so that they understand, because we're talking about this. We all know what it is. I want to just paint a picture, and then I want you to tell me where I'm wrong, okay? And I think I'm reading this directly from your website, but I want you to picture this. For everybody I know that's ever had sleep apnea, a mask, Jack included, has talked about the struggle with the tubes and getting caught in them and wanting to pull it off. But the Dreamport is a one-size-fits-all, zero headgear solution that prevents leaks and eliminates mask lines by taking the tubes and taping them directly to your nostrils without being invasive, and is compatible with every single CPAP machine on the market and isn't covered by insurance. Is that right?
That's correct. Now, the one thing I will tell you is, like, you can't escape the actual main CPAP tube. I get people like that ask, kind of a similar question. Yeah, but what about the tube, and how do you keep the tube from getting wrapped around your neck? And there are things that are out there to kind of help with tube management. You can get a stand and run the tube up over the top of your head, and the mask just basically kind of drops down to your face.
If you're a bad sleeper or something like that.
Yeah, like the tube won't be in the bed with you. So if you turn left or right, the mask is connected to you. But as you turn, the mask goes with you. But it's impossible for the tubing to get, like, lodged around your neck. The issue is most patients don't realize, like, a tube management type system exists. With ours, it's incredibly beneficial to have one. But you're not going to, if you have a CPAP unit, you're not going to get away from a main primary 6-foot tube.
You need oxygen to get into your nose somehow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Unless somebody creates this invention that's Wi-Fi based and somehow the air is...
It's just initiated yeah. right from the front.
It's communicating from the base station directly to the nose. But Max, you're spot on with how you describe that. And me, and I've tried his product, and it is extraordinarily lightweight. And you don't have any restrictions whatsoever as it relates to the harness, because it doesn't exist. The harnesses do not exist. And it's such a lightweight thing, and you don't even feel it on your face. So if any of you that are listening to this that suffer with sleep apnea, or at least struggle with taking the mask off, which is something that I've battled with over the years, give this a try, because it's, again, you don't feel it, and it works beautifully.
And we'll put links in the show notes, Jack and Stuart.
Like, sure.
We're going to put links to all of this in the show notes. I've already recommended it to two people that didn't know what it was, only because I think they're just so used to dealing with the thing that they've always dealt with. Do you know what I mean? They're used to just buying the mask and have given themselves over to the fact that they're going to be struggling with it or dealing with it their whole life. They don't even think about, is there another option at this point, because they've dealt with it so long. And I told them about it, and they were like, you've got to be kidding me. I'm looking into this immediately.
Yeah, it's a phenomenal product. And Stuart, just pivoting a little, because a lot of our listeners are entrepreneurs. They're either in a business that they've developed and are trying to grow, or they're about to start one. And again, with your story and the things that you've gone through, you know, you've experienced a lot. And the question really is for people out there that are struggling with keeping it all together, their family life, their own personal health, relationships, and then running a business. And those things are so incredibly important to keep balanced as best as you can. But how did you and how are you managing all of those things? And what can you tell an aspiring entrepreneur that can actually help them in their journey as they move on in their businesses?
I think one of the big keys is, unless you just like immediately have a product that you're hitting out of the market, and you know, the issue is, you can create something that's amazing. Getting people to know that it exists is far more challenging now than it has ever been before. So it's just like, you know, 6 years ago, 7 years ago, you could advertise on Facebook, and Facebook was like that dark, seedy brother that stood outside your room and just like, I know everything you're saying. Hey, did you see, you want some cigarettes? Like, and then like, and then you'd have cigarettes on your, so.
Which is why we all have sleep apnea. No,
yeah, but the issue is like, Apple is like, we don't want you listening. So like the ability to market, we don't want you getting cigarettes, but we have to keep selling cigarettes. Like, well, the issue is like, Apple's like cut all the privacy stuff off. Now Google's kind of getting in with that. Like, so the ability to market to people, to just throw stuff out there and then target people and remarket, like all of that has changed. And it's becoming way, way harder to just introduce something that's out there. So it's one of those things where if you're creating a product and you're going to have distributors, you have to understand that most of your distributors are going to market for you. So trying to market yourself, you're basically competing for ad spend against other companies who are competing using your brand name.
Yeah.
So it's just one of those things where no matter how much money you think you're going to need to create marketing and that spend to create the awareness, it's never enough. Don't stop raising money. Always be looking. Don't be so tight with what maybe you think your valuation is. Now, again, this is if like you're kind of an entrepreneur trying to create something that like could potentially be a multi-million dollar exit, you know, different from, you know, maybe a flower shop that's local because like you're advertising local with that. But if you're trying to, you know, create something that's much bigger and broader and has a, you know, a massive market, you're never going to bring enough money in as you think you could. And your window is small. You particularly with a patent, like you're on a clock. So you want to balance how much money you're going to bring in, what you're going to give up of your company in order to, you know, create the awareness. And there was a little bit of, you know, that was a struggle for us kind of early on, like, how are you going to do that? And, you know, how much money you're bringing in, how many investors. So it's just one of those things where looking back now, I was a lot slower at times bringing money in than I should have been, that if I could go back, I'd probably dunk myself on the head and say, no, absolutely. You that guy you turned away, you should absolutely have taken all that cash.
Taking it. You turned guys away, Stuart.
Oh, no, I absolutely turned guys
away. What a good guy you are. You said, no, you keep your money, sir. We're good. Thank you very much.
I was always under the idea, well, we're going to grow more revenue and we're gonna have a better valuation, and then I'll come back and I'll see you again. Well,
you're the only guy I know that's ever said that.
Oh, no, that's a typical thing in entrepreneurship. Yeah, it happens quite a bit.
Yeah, it's trying to figure out like what's the right amount of like, but it really is. I'm more of the opinion that you should have a bigger war chest and the ability to spend it than I was then. I think that's incredibly critical. And I also think you need to have people that have more ability to pivot and think out of the box and are not so linear thinking. So it's kind of hard to figure out like who to bring in, because you might have somebody that's, you know, your best buddy and he may be a hard worker, but it may be that, you know, ultimately in the end, his ideas really aren't going to be the ideas that kind of get you across the finish line. So it's challenging trying to figure out like who's going to be the right fit to kind of incorporate into the company as well. You're all headed down the right path together.
But you would say to the entrepreneur that's aspiring that if they have a true passion behind what it is that they want to bring the world, even through all these obstacles and all of these challenges that they will certainly face, you would say to them, go for it.
The first thing I would tell them to do is ask themselves if they're ready for the next 5 or 6 years to work 65 or 70 hours a week and have no fallback. It's like flying like a trapeze artist with no net. And
maybe also to not get paid.
Yeah, there's been some times where like we just didn't know how we're going to make payroll.
You're the last person to get paid when it's your company, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's challenging on every front. There's tons of headaches. There's every day you're putting out a fire. So if you don't handle adversity well and you don't like working a lot and you don't mind if you mind getting your hands dirty, like this is, you know, doing something like this is not for you. Like you hear all the time, people are like, I'm going to go into business for myself. There's a particular mindset that you're going to make mistakes and you better not make such a critical mistake that you can't overcome it. But it's one thing to go into it, you know, knowing that you can pivot and you can kind of think out of the box. It's another thing. Just think, hey, look, I just want to do it. And you just jump right into the hot bed. And you just have no idea what you're getting into. You better make sure you bring along some people that do. Otherwise, like you're going to get yourself into trouble. So
that's sound advice. That's really sound advice, Stuart.
Everybody on their couch has an idea, right?
They do. But whether or not you can execute it and do all the other things to get it across a finish line, it's a different story.
And I find that a lot of people, when they do have ideas, they rush to get a patent. And I think that's a critical mistake, because what they really should be doing is testing the market for viability first, you know, and really just make sure that there's a need for what it is that you want to put out there before you go ahead and lock it down, you know, through a patent and start marketing and doing all that kind of stuff.
That would be important too. If you don't know the product's going to sell or you're not going to get the traction you want, you know, there's not a whole lot of reason for you to, you know, keep trying to push forth, you know, with a lot of effort.
What problem are you solving? I mean, in your case, Stuart, you're solving a problem that 25 million Americans, 30 million Americans a year suffer from, and most of them aren't diagnosed, right?
Yeah, a lot of people are undiagnosed. I think ResMed did a study maybe 5 years ago. Now, you can take it with a grain of salt, but in ResMed's opinion, there was just under a billion people that had sleep-related problem. And then as soon as they released that study, their stock shot up.
Was that globally or?
Yeah, globally.
Globally.
I think, you know.
You should release some statistics like that then, bro.
Yeah. I mean, it's you know, I think there are a ton of people that are out there that, you know, slip through the cracks, don't know that they have sleep problems. Yeah, I want to say there's probably close to 14 or 15 million resubscribing, resupplying CPAP patients just in the United States. You know, there's probably 50 million in the U.S. that are undiagnosed. There's probably globally, there's probably in the neighborhood of 50 million people on CPAP, maybe more now. You know, it's not something that's going away. It's more and more people are getting diagnosed and more people are getting put on treatment of some sort.
And more and more people are becoming healthier because of it.
If you can stay on it, yeah.
That's the key. That's the key.
The issue is, you know, CPAP's still a challenge. If you look at the right, it depends on how you interpret the statistics. It's probably still more like 60% of patients can tolerate, you know, PAP therapy. Mm-hmm. So you're still talking, you know.
That's not
four
that
in
big.
10, 5 in 10 people, like, can't stay on therapy.
They just can't deal with it. And I'm one of them. I've struggled with it since I've had it. And, you know, I go through spurts of being able to tolerate it. And then most of the time I'm not able to tolerate it. And I've explored every possible option under the sun, even surgery, which are not very good solutions. And today it's fascinating that there's some big pharma coming out with some medication that's in the fourth clinical trial stage that are looking to release some medication. It's interesting. We'll see where that goes and if they're how effective it becomes and what types of side effects that people don't know about yet that might rear its ugly head. But there's got to be a better solution.
Hopefully down the road, you know, somebody will come up with something, you know, that kind of flips the switch off and, you know, everybody can sleep great without, you know, struggling to breathe. But I think it's going to be a lot further out than, you know, the next couple of years. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to be morbid, but I'd love for some people to struggle with sleep so that you have a lot of success with Dreamport. Again, the sexiest name for anything CPAP related I've ever heard of in my life. Where'd that name come? Where did you come up with that name? You had a dream, didn't you?
No, I definitely had a dream. So essentially, there's a little for Dreamport. There's two little ports or straws that basically become extensions of your nostrils, and that's really where I think that originated from. With Eclipse, it's that the magnets basically kind of eclipse over the stainless steel rings on the outside of the tape. So they just kind of slide into place. And that was really kind of how Eclipse came about, as far as a name.
It's so good. It's so good. You're the poet laureate of apnea business.
I mean, really inspiring to me, and I'm sure inspiring to everybody else. We are just ready to conclude the podcast. And I just really want to thank you, Stuart, for coming on today.
Thanks
Your
for
story
having
is incredible. Anytime. We'd love to follow up with you another time. We can
Definitely.
Jump on another podcast with you as well. We can cover some other things. We're thrilled that you're here and we love what you're doing in the space because you are creating change. And that to me that's a leader, that's a trendsetter. And so we're really impressed with you. So thank you again, Max. Love you, brother. And to our audience that's listening, we appreciate you being here and keep watching us. We've got some really great stuff lined up as we move along. Have a great day, everybody.
Stuart, thank you.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. It's been great.
If you like this episode of the Jack and Max Show, please subscribe, rate us, and review us on wherever you get your podcasts from. It helps more than you can know, and it costs nothing and only takes a second. So just do it, please. But if you don't, I won't know, so you don't have to. But please do it. It really helps us. Thanks so much.